Good morning. It is Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. It is 11:02. We are gathered for the general discussion in the board conference room. We have Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan present today. And first up is our Juvenile Justice Quarterly Update. And we have Director Jim Goodwin and Deputy Director Brad Kane with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Excuse me, to some degree this morning I've been chasing the elusive Wapiti for the last 8 days. Just got back in the office this morning. But I did put together an outline for you all today. And per Commissioner Morgan's advice last time, I think it's important to break down all of the different departments, whatever you'd like to call them, that fall under the juvenile justice umbrella, and just talk a little bit about each one to give you a good overview of all that we're doing. It's a little bit more than just probation for kids going on right now. That's on our plate. So to start right off, prevention, the biggest movement, as you know, or the most movement, has been in prevention, which came under juvenile justice, about a year ago, I think, a year and a half ago. And the big news are our three school outreach positions are now a reality. We have them hired and ready to go. That has been on, I know my wish list since I started in admin with the department nearly 10 years ago. I mean, this is really, this is the culmination of years and years and years of work and planning and, you know, how do we fund it? How do we make this happen? Three Rivers, I will say, and I'll speak for Dave on this one because he said so in open meetings, that they are just thrilled to have the support of the department in their schools. They're extremely accommodating.
So this is through the sheriff's office, though? These are officers?
No. These are
in addition.
Right.
We had three deputy residence officers, so this is in addition to
these. These are three, instead of probation officers, these are juvenile justice school outreach officers. Wow. We went ahead and kept that name just for consistency, but the idea...
It was first presented in the budget as a trial one, and then we were able to pull it together with funding from marijuana dollars.
Right.
And
okay.
So separately, the school resource officers and this deputy residents are separate. So deputy residents,
right.
School resource officer.
Yep.
Now this is the intervention to try to help, to try to work with families to keep them from going too far down adjudication. And there's also a prevention trap, so that's kind of a team approach.
Right. And along with those options now has embedded therapists, adolescent therapists in each of the schools. So the idea is once this team is pulled together and the sheriff's school resource officers are the last piece of that, you have your school, usually the vice principal, our staff, prevention staff, options, therapy staff there, and what was the last piece?
The sheriff.
This one, the sheriff, the school resource officer.
And then wings as well.
Yes. And the work that's happening, Women's Crisis and Support Team doing some great work out there. So it's really shaping up. They're brand new. The school district is excited about it. We're excited about it.
So they're in place right now?
Space, we have, yes, they've provided spaces for them. We have one that's doing about half a day in one of the schools. It's two folks were actually promoted from within juvenile justice, and one is a person that's been doing a lot of prevention work with us for years, used to be with the county, and is now coming back. We were able to pull her back from the CCO, all care, primary health.
The schools are giving classrooms to the ones that we've had out so far, actual classrooms, so they're expecting an influx of education and training.
A great thing. So just the FTE right there, another three folks kind of coming under the umbrella, expecting to do some great work. And that's the quick prevention.
And you're going to be bringing an update for position. It's kind of the next step of the recommendation. When's that coming?
Yes, this week.
Is it this Thursday?
Right.
Okay, so he'll be back in a couple days with something about this that we...
Cool.
What we needed to do is actually restructure all of prevention now that Sean has. I mean, she went from having two, five employees and just how we're going to make it happen from an admin level. So we have a proposal coming on that later this week. Children, for the CAC, Children's Advocacy Center, you know about the VOCA grant that we were successful in getting a couple of months back, which another wish list item has been a forensic interviewer that's an employee of the center. That is, we're trying to get creative in our recruitment for that because it's so specific. We flew the position everywhere that we normally do for a couple of weeks, and we just did not get qualified applicants. It's really a specialized field. But in that vein, I will be bringing a proposal. This is just kind of a pre heads up for the board to, I really believe that a full-time, the VOCA grant covers about a three-quarter time position. I think we'll have a really hard time not recruiting a position that isn't full-time.
Sure.
So part of a proposal for the CAC, which is forthcoming sometime between now and the first of the year, would be to bump Tina Stafford, our children's advocate there, to full-time, and the forensic interviewer position to full-time. I think we're just there, workload-wise. The DA, I'm sure, would agree with the work that we do through MDT and all of that. So we are actively recruiting. Like I said, trying to get a little more creative with where and how we recruit for that position. We hit all of the centers in the state, you know, as well as our normal HR recruitment. But so still working on that. And then also, just as a lid loosener for a few months down the road, our physical space. When we bring in this forensic interviewer, as you know, we share the space with CASA. Either program right now could probably fully occupy our square footage in that building. And so I will be coming and advocating for a physical space change, whether that's relocating the CAC or relocating CASA. But I think both programs are suffering a little bit right now.
Sure.
They're growing, we're growing.
Simple solution in my mind, when you look at, you know, moving chess pieces, it's to take IT, move them someplace. What I don't like about IT, and I don't like about really, well, facilities is doing it, but you have to depreciate their location over at least one client is being served on the spot that they're at. Mm. There is really nobody other than IT that's there. CASA doesn't count. CAC doesn't really count as a big user. Two computers or maybe that. So if we move them someplace over here, this is a board discussion. By the time you get ready to ask for it, you need it in a month. It takes us 6 months of planning. So the time to be talking about that is probably 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's not an easy move. They're the hardest, probably, infrastructure-wise, to be relocating. Everybody else can pick up their computers and go somewhere. That's not how they work. So we've got I think we need to expedite that conversation, maybe even this Thursday. I know that Ryan's trying to put the bows on a facility study, but it's changing as he's doing it with these kinds of programs. He didn't know about these kinds of increases in FTEs.
Right.
He doesn't really have a good grip on community corrections and where they're planning to go with their program. Same thing could be said for his facility review of the jail and its staff there and administration. So it's his challenges is like trying to put a snapshot, but a proposal. He doesn't really know the lay of the land. So anyway, not to get sidetracked, but
right, definitely
we'll address it.
Yeah,
and we'll get it moved. The nice thing is that there's options.
Right.
I see we can probably.
And we, I mean, honestly, would be as a department. And I remember when Ryan went around, surveyed different departments a while back, talking about this study. We're more than flexible when it comes to that. It just the idea of staying on site if possible,
right?
Not to, you know, nudge Mr. McCafferty out of his digs or whatever. But
no, and I know he's not exactly excited about moving, but
yeah,
you know, you have to kind of take a blurry blind's eye to it and say, this is what's best for the cause. I can't put CAC necessarily in the basement of the juvenile justice building.
Yeah,
that's exactly where I was thinking for IT, though.
I can't do that.
The old EOC down there.
can quote IT.
Right. And also, just as a, you know, general discussion on this, we are now fully occupied in our building. Mm-hmm. Every office, every nook,
that
every
cranny.
That would
have been another thought, but it doesn't work.
Right.
Those are like programs that shouldn't be separated.
Right.
They should be right next to each other.
Right. We were about the time prevention came on, the DA vacated their child support unit and those things upstairs.
Yeah.
We were able to move right into those three offices, which was great, but we wouldn't have had the physical space for
what we do.
Them.
Unless that happened. Yeah. So.
I don't want to get you sidetracked.
Yeah, so just real quickly, we don't talk a lot about court mediation. Crosby Smith, our mediator, he flies kind of under the radar, but I wanted to mention the important work that he does.
Oh, I'm sorry, before you leave,
yeah.
The space is only one element. The board has approved a $100,000 grant for CASA, and that's gonna increase their staff. You alluded to that,
mm-hmm.
but it really, I think, merits, you're gonna be responsible for oversight as that's part of your program. So granted, we're not looking at moving it from Jackson County, Josephine County, CASA quite yet. And it may never. It may mm-hmm. be mine administered jointly, but you're going to be required to have oversight over that grant. So that's your program. And so next report that you do, CASA has its own title.
Oh, great.
And you'll be right? So just for structural. And you'll be bringing, you know, tap, sand, whatever it is.
Okay.
You'll know. Okay. But that'll have its own little dealio, the nexus. Right now it's tangential.
Right.
Because we don't provide any resources other than the space.
Right.
Look at that again, too.
Next report will be, it's on a trajectory for the lease to be paid out full price.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 3 years, they're at 25% right now, 50, 75, and 100. That's what we adopted a few years mm-hmm. ago. I think you were part of that.
I was. I think that we should maybe revisit that.
To go which direction?
To help more. I don't know. I want leases to cover the expenses and of that kind of stuff, but at the same time, well, let's see how it does with this $100,000 grant.
That's what I was thinking. I can almost justify charging them rent when we're giving them a $100,000
yeah.
grant, and then it's apples to apples. Everybody's being mm-hmm. CAC isn't treated mm-hmm. any different than CASA, mm-hmm. So to speak. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're going to come requesting some money for mm-hmm. CAC. Which, if we had $1 million budget, there still is $40,000 or $60,000, I think. Don't quote me on that, because I don't know exactly what it is
right.
off the top of my head, but I think it's close to that. 680, 780, 880, it might be 120, maybe. So she's good fiscal responsible. She doesn't want to spend it all. She wants
right.
to spend it
right.
as well as
great
possible.
Spreadsheets. So
there's really only $10 left.
I want to have room for growing.
Her budget's $10.
Yeah.
Mine might be $120. Somewhere in there.
No, but it's, you know, this is stuff that is important. And, it, you know, the forensic interview, or why does our community have so much? Well, there
yeah.
is a high need.
Right.
And maybe it's because of our poverty levels. Maybe you've got
the
drug rates, whatever else. But we need to make sure that we're responding to the victimization of our kids.
Lean into that. You know,
yep.
if you don't get the interview done well, the whole thing's botched.
Mm-hmm.
So you're investing tons of resources in the rest of it, and you're skimping on that first vital point. I just, you know, I didn't even know about it. And I have to take myself back a little bit when she came in here and presenting this thing. I was like, it's what I told you when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's advocating for your program the
mm-hmm.
way you're advocating for your program. If you leave that up to somebody else,
right.
you're not doing your job, and I need to find somebody else.
Right.
The DA comes to those budget meetings, and he fights like the Dickens for every dime.
Mm-hmm.
So does the sheriff, so does everybody else. We make the decision to say, we're not going to give you as much, or we're not going to give you as much. Don't you make that decision.
Right.
You need everything you advocate for. So anyway, same thing for that CAC. Be an interviewer, you know. Fight for it. Ask
mm-hmm.
for it. She'll do the hard job.
Right.
Juggling.
Sorry, we just didn't have the resources.
If I need to chop some wood, I will.
$10. Sorry to give you sidetracked all the time.
No, no problem. So, yes, so just moving on to mediation, I just thought it was important to mention the program and talk about what Mr. Smith does. We are still
Is that a volunteer position, or do we compensate?
No, we compensate. It's paid through, there's a funding stream through the state courts. I don't remember which fines or fees or whatever statewide that are collected that are dispersed out to each county.
There was a gentleman who came a little while ago who was advocating, he does this apparently, I think maybe for us, and he was advocating for doing it with marijuana land use disputes. But I just wondered, you know, what's the rate of success with these? 20% actually get mediated to settlement, or 50%, or
it is. I can bring you numbers.
I would like to know.
Way higher than that.
Much higher.
But the court basically nudges all custody.
Yeah, it's required that all start there.
To mediation. So part of Crosby's program, there's an orientation that happens every Monday.
Okay.
He gives you the overview of what mediation looks like.
It's a really important program.
This is a section that I think that if there were a way to do more with CASA, would be to extend CASA to here. The kids are the ones that are underserved in this process. Mm-hmm. The parents are in mediation, but there isn't an advocate for the kids. And in talking to San, it is an area they are tasked with doing, but don't have the resources to do yet. And it is one of those kind of...
Interesting. Maybe with that grant, their scope can expand a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And part of the work that Mr. Smith does, it's important to note that what we consider a successful mediation is something that both parties can live with. Mm-hmm. You know, that it might not be everything that they want, but they come to there's pieces that they can agree on.
Sure.
So that if they do go to court for the other couple of pieces, it's not the whole enchilada; it's just part of it. But I can get numbers out of him for our next. But going back years and years, we're very successful with the program, which keeps the court docket lower and keeps it better for all. He also helps out. We do with some education classes for juvenile justice. Well, 10% of his FTE is devoted to education classes or a victim offender mediation if we need it. He does a theft impact class. Yep. For kids that are specifically involved with theft. They come in for 8 hours, they go through a class, they, you know, learn how to rethink and things like that. So he's providing a pretty good service for us there.
Great.
We have just about 10 minutes left.
Oh, okay. I can go fast from here.
It's my fault, I apologize.
I appreciate the detail, and this is something I asked you to bring back because I think there's so much going on in your department that we're not aware of that we need to know these things.
So detention, our audit went very well. The feedback that we got from finance for the levy the detention portion of the levy funds that we were audited on. So as far as detention usage, how we're spending the money, I mean, we've done a very good job in accounting for that and keeping that separate from, as you know, the three different programs: court, field, residential now, and then detention. Detention being where we can spend the levy monies, and the other ones we really can't. So that went very well. They were with us for a couple of days. Susan, our administrative supervisor, did a great job setting that up.
I spoke with them last week. They
Referrals from the sheriff's office on the rise. They are out and about now, and we are getting business. And so Brad's getting business. His POs are getting business. I just throw that in there as the timing to open. We have a young man in detention this morning, several felony crimes out in the IV. This young man would not have come to us last year. There just wouldn't have been response for that. So that's just one anecdotal situation where...
What is your rate of capacity, or where are you at? You've got 14?
Yeah, 14 beds. We've got 5 in today, and it
fluctuates.
It fluctuates greatly. As you know, also depending on number of Measure 11s, because they stay for a while. We had 3 for a long time. We have 1 in right now. But the long and short of that is we've met the detention need since we've reopened, and that's been the goal.
Okay.
So any youth that required that service, or that the system deemed required that service, has been able to go in.
Are you finding a better response with the 3 law enforcement agencies in referrals to you? That even if it's not detention bound, that referrals are still coming to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we are still in a retraining phase where with the law enforcement agencies, so many of the officers out there, there was such turnover. all they knew was, here's a ticket, come to court, here's a ticket, come to court. So our philosophy still is, as it is with the sheriff, all crimes come to detention. We might only keep you for an hour till we hand you off to your parent, but that's sort of the other, not just the kids that stay overnight or for a week or for a month. It's the ones that come in, we process, we do that intake with them, we hand them off to the parents, and that's a piece of the puzzle that was missing for a lot of years too. And real quickly, we are in the final stages of at least having something that I can bring to, liaison first. This is something we've talked about at the board level off and on, but the idea of contracting with extra detention capacity beds with what's called a 30-day extended detention program. We had it before, and it's just there's some administrative things and an application that we need to go through. So I'm about ready. I've got the application about to the point where I can bring it and talk to Commissioner Morgan about it. And the idea is other counties pay us a daily rate for the 30-day stay, and it's treatment. It's in detention, but it's a treatment for kids, similar to what they would get in a residential center, but these are kids that don't sit still.
It would be paid for separately than the levy.
Yes, and a revenue and income.
Theoretically offsetting some of the revenue.
Right. Similar to detention or residential, every Josephine County youth that has required the residential level of care since we opened, we've been able, the doors are open and we've served that kid. So that's pretty simple. And the contracting also, we started with 3 beds with Department of Human Services and 3 beds with Oregon Youth Authority. And we'll tweak that a little bit. The OIA need has been a little less than the DHS need. We're probably going to move to 4 and 2, but we'll keep that contract number at 6.
That's
because we don't want to cut the level for the local kids. We need that capacity.
I understood that they needed space. They were at capacity system-wide.
Yeah,
they're going through some budget cuts and some stuff right now.
And you know, kind of the bright, and Brad's here, this is his baby since I haven't had time to do any of it in the last year. Our court and field unit, probation, getting kids through court, community service, everything. We've had almost 100% turnover in the last 2 years. We've got some great energy.
You mean staff-wise?
The staffing is, we have an incredible group of people that, these are the kinds of folks that come to you and ask if they can do more work.
Yeah.
You go visit.
And, I need to.
Yeah, and it's been so refreshing. Mm-hmm. He's running a really tight ship, and the services are really clicking. I would say we are at a, since I've been with the department almost 20 years now, it's our level of service in probation is it's there.
It's fantastic.
And a lot of that's the new blood, the new energy people that are.
Well, the need is certainly
there. And so.
Is there any restorative justice programs going on?
The basis for a lot of what we do in residential is restorative justice. We've just sent 2 staff to a state restorative justice training because a lot of folks, myself included, that were trained in the last 10 years have cycled out, gone to different places.
Yeah.
And so we...
the premise is essentially that you have the youth be held accountable for the crime by giving something back, if it's not to their victim directly, another victim.
Sure. Right. And that's also part of the programming when Crosby Smith gets involved in some of our cases. That's a restorative justice model. When you sit the offender down with the victim and work out what works for the victim in that process, but it gets the buy-in from the from the offender also.
Yeah. The whole Mark Twain go paint a fence kind of.
Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of prep work that needs done prior to you just putting the victim and offender in the room, obviously.
Right.
I mean, there's
months. And it's not for every case.
Right.
But so, with the last couple of minutes, any questions?
Real good.
No, I'm really proud of the work that you guys are doing over there, and it's exciting to see the movement and the hope that is going to be offered in the Three River School District by having those partnerships, and it's exciting to see the momentum.
When the audit comes out officially, something we need to highlight is how it has been leveraged for doing not just what it was charged to do, but how you guys have taken that to the next level. I think it's really important that it's expanding on the bang for the buck that the county taxpayers said we'll sign up for. to say we've been able to leverage those funds and do a third more than we ever than we expected to. You know, your 10 cents has gone along, about 15 cents has gone a lot farther than
right.
One of the challenges, and not to be a Debbie Downer, but recruitment of qualified workers.
Oh, sure.
We have an education standard in our facility because of the residential that OIA doesn't have. So we have to have an aggregate bachelor's degree for half of our staff.
Wow.
So the recruitment is very difficult. A lot of really qualified workers have come in that we had to turn away.
Really?
Because of that.
Is that a self-imposed standard, or?
No, that's a state, well actually state. A federal. At the level where the funding comes through,
yeah.
Through Medicaid dollars, it comes down to the staff qualifications.
That's challenging.
And it does make it challenging, and it's just as an ongoing challenge, and this is statewide. I go to the meetings every month. I can tell you with certainty, shift work right now in 2018, even for a county benefited, it's very hard to come by.
Yeah.
We get folks that come in and say, yes, we love you, you're great, you're educated. How about swing shift and you don't get weekends off? You mean I don't get 9 to 5 Monday through Friday? No thanks. I'll go
somewhere.
You know. And so that is
tough.
Like I said, and it is
it's a job.
Folks, every department that I know of is they're going through that with a residential or a detention facility, but we're getting there.
Okay. Something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks
a lot.
Yes, thank you.
See you Thursday.
Yes.
Up next on our agenda is large residents at Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base. And we have some Smoke Jumper representatives here. And Larry Graves also is in the audience if we have any questions. So, gentlemen, if you'd be willing to come up, and just for the recorder, if you'd be willing to introduce yourself for the sake of our minutes and stuff like that. And
thanks for your patience.
Thank you. I'm Harold Hartman. I'm vice president of the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum and an ex-jumper. And I live in Klamath Falls, or near Klamath Falls, I guess.
Gary Buck, I'm president of the Smoke Jumper Museum, and I was a smoke jumper for 17 years.
Crazy. Crazy bunch of guys at this end of the table.
This end or that end? No.
We know he is, too, when he's there.
Yeah, he pretty much is. The only two sane ones on this.
So you have the clicker there.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to go to the other string. It's supposed to go from this one to this one. Hit that button right there. I'm trying to get my other mouse over there, and it was doing it earlier, and now it does not.
Okay, there you are. Keep going to the right.
You can do it up the top, too.
And then that's true. You can go view.
Just pick one.
There you go.
There it is. I'm glad all of you people are very experienced with that. I've given many, many PowerPoints, but I've never put it together myself.
Oh, wow.
And so Dan was very adamant that I bring our report to you in a PowerPoint thing, and so that's what I did.
Why would he do that? He can't do a PowerPoint.
I'm not sure. He said Ricky and Wendy could help me. So, and they did, and I had numerous people helping export pictures from an email that is a JPEG or some other things. I mean, I like doing hands-on things, you know, nailing things and stuff like that. So, but let me just drop back 1 second before we go through the PowerPoint and say that we're back here. You'll recall we were here last December and we had some discussions and stuff, and we were asked, both the airport department and ourselves, to go back and do some more work, I guess. And Larry did some yeoman work getting some quotes and information about various aspects to the large residents at the jump base. What we, Larry and Dan both have already seen all these pictures, Lily, are a group of pictures around the room here of various work that we've done over the last 8 to 10 years on numerous buildings out there. And the one thing that I would point out, if you look around, almost all of them are of building remodels and things like that. And the one thing that Larry and I early on discussed was how to if there was a possibility of having the large residence become a kind of a part of, a tied in to the overall thing. And the way that that's done, if you'll look at the pictures around the room here, is by red cedar shingles. And so all of the buildings out there have some form of shingles. Now, I will say that the administration building, which we could point out here, is not shingled. Right. It is redwood siding. Vertical grain, for those who understand lumber and stuff, is a very high grade lumber, and that was cut back in the early 1940s. So it's, you know, it's kind of a unique thing, and so we left that way. The one other building that we don't have shingled totally yet is the tool shed. And last summer we did the exposed parts of that building, and we'll finish those this summer.
Does probably. Most of your work take place in that week or two time in the summer where you guys have a reunion?
Well, we have
a lot of it done.
Yeah.
One time we got 100 jumpers to come from all over the nation to help us, but that's the biggest biggest time. But sure. Most of it does. But
we try to have one a year, but I think 2 years ago we didn't have one. I don't remember, but it gives them an opportunity. But I would also say that throughout the year, stuff is being done. I mean, it takes a lot of maintenance, a lot of the lawns, all that. We do that. We actually get paid to do that. You know?
So today we're going to talk just about the large residence?
We're talking about the large residence, okay?
Cool.
And that's we'll move here to the... I gave you a copy of these, so... It's not working.
Let me see it.
I feel like I'm in Kmart or something.
Such a nice saw.
So just have to click it a little harder.
Oh, okay.
And it'll go.
You guys remember Kmart where Diamond
is
right now?
Yeah.
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 Back in the day, Kmart.
We'll hope that doesn't ring again. Anyway, okay. So this is a picture, a composite picture that I put together that I think you guys saw last year, but I wanted to include it because it does show the residence on the left-hand side that we're talking about today. It shows the entrance, and I think the joint interest of the airport manager, the airport management, and the smoke jumpers to try to come up with something for the entrance to improve it. You know, Lily, you were the airport liaison there for a year or two or more, and so this is kind of a vision of what we
it
want.
It just was a long year, but yeah.
what we would want to see there. The other aspect that doesn't show up there, because I was not able to export the picture of the low rail fence, which I took numerous ones of. There's a low rail fence starting at the gate straight back on the road here that goes all the way around to the front of the Smoke Jumper Museum. And it's a low split rail fence, very similar to the type of fence that was there back in the 50s and 60s. I'm trying, the entrance.
That's all I see is those lights in that screen, sorry.
This little pointer is supposed to show up on there, but it doesn't always.
I see it on the wall. But
yeah, it's on the wall, see? And earlier, when we tried it, it did work some of the time. Doesn't matter. The entrance is right in the middle, of course, and on the right-hand side is the museum sign or the base sign. And then a display that we're putting. We have two twin beaches, and one of the twin beaches is going to be on the poles to the right that are already in place and ready for it next spring. We're in the process of finishing painting the airplane, but also manufacturing plastic props for it. So we're trying to make that as light as possible. We took the two engines out, which weighed 1,200 pounds a piece, and we have replacement fake engines, if you want to call it that, fake. They won't turn. At any rate, there has been a suggestion of maybe the plastic props on the aircraft. We could put a solar run small motor in there so it would turn and be lit and stuff. But that's beside the point because we're not open at night anyway. So anyway, the low rail fence, Larry and
we just have till noon as well.
Okay, Larry and ourselves. Okay, oh good. No, we'll get them. Don't worry. Anyway, the low rail fence will come out on both sides there to kind of create a funnel effect to get the people in. I did bring something that no people have not seen yet, and that is at the where the aircraft is there. The plan is to put a kind of a gravel turnout there so that people coming off the road can come there and they'll see a kind of a sign like this here. That'll be mounted there. It'll be dedicated to Dave Laws, who you all know. And this is some of the stuff that will be on the sign, and there will also be a discussion of the aircraft itself. So, okay. So we left you last time, all of us, Larry and us, and we went about our various tasks and stuff. And one of the things that Larry did was he came up with some quotes for demolition of that house and getting rid of it. And those quotes came up right at $30,000. So the airport advisory board then met a couple times and had discussions about it and stuff, and people were kind of surprised at that cost and stuff. There's some minor hazardous things to deal with if you were to demo it. The lead paint disposal would have to be taken care of, as well as a small area of asbestos. Okay, so then the advisory board went to, let's set up a subcommittee, and that subcommittee met, Larry, twice, right? Yeah, two times this summer. And had very good, actually it was about like an advisory board meeting, huh, Larry? Because almost everybody on the advisory board came to the subcommittee, if you want to call it that. And we discussed many different things. We went back and asked our board different questions, because our board, if you recall, last fall, a year ago, not this fall, but last fall, passed a motion that they wanted to pursue saving the house if at all possible, as from its historical perspective. Okay, they didn't really say anything about use or anything, just from a historical perspective and how we could do that. So we went and we did a number of different things, put it together, and we came up with the term repurpose in place, because most people realized that they didn't want the liability of having to spend the $30,000 if there was some way that we could use it in some way and have it be a beneficial asset to the airport. And so the term repurpose in place means just that. See if we could find some uses for it in place right where it's at. And this slide shows five things that we've identified as uses for the building. And the first and foremost that I contend is as a secure office space for the resident manager, who is not Larry. Larry's not resident out there. He's here in Grants Pass or in Ashland or somewhere. second is the carport will provide covered parking area for the resident manager's vehicles, as well as the county vehicles, or vehicle, I guess. Thirdly, the Smoke Jumper Museum office and storage area. So we would use a portion of the building. A limited restroom facility. which means probably generally not showers and people living there or anything like that, but just a limited restroom facility. And the fifth thing could provide general purpose rooms for small meetings, maybe for construction meetings when they do construction projects out at the airport. In the past, they've used various hangar space and things like that. And so
who's in charge of saying what kind of a meeting can and cannot happen?
What's that?
Who's in charge of who says?
The very last two words on that slide is who's in charge of what that building's being used for.
Great.
Under this proposal.
Great.
And it is the airport management. So, because, again, remember, when we first started out with this, we weren't talking about uses or anything. And we, the jumpers, did not come up with any of the uses other than the use that we might use. One of the next slide will show where that office space might be. But entertain the Airport Advisory Board in the mess hall. Okay, and that's worked out fairly well. But last year we had over 8,000 visitors. And there is a point in time we believe once that airplane's up front, we'll probably double our visitors the next year.
Certainly grabs people's attention.
It will. It will. We hope we don't get too many calls in. There's a plane crashing in the woods. but we don't think so. Lots of airports have that kind of a display. The people have suggested libraries. People have suggested the pilot lounge.
The key element is that the airport management has jurisdiction.
That's what I believe.
Because if we enter into a partnership, not to get to the chase, but I've read your proposal. It sounds great. At the end of the day, this has got to stay in the curation of the county and airport management is our delegated liaison to that issue. So
absolutely.
I'm in favor of it. It sounds really good. I don't mind sharing the cost. I think that's appropriate given even our estimate is $30,000+, and you still don't know once you start doing something. I know this because I've done the largest demo project in Josephine County's history, I would say, of the Demick Tower. That's a $1.5 million demo. Nobody's ever done anything in Josephine County of that size to date that I'm aware of. That was substantial, and then we found stuff every day.
Every day, just about.
Took longer, were more expensive, happened faster.
Ask anyone who's remodeled a home.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I'll tell you this, at the airport, there's lots of rocks. So every rock you turn over, you may find something. We've had a number of projects out there, the fencing, the runway work, and stuff like that.
I would say that your proposal seems really conservative on potential costs.
It probably is.
I don't know that it's actually appropriate that you absorb. What I don't want you to do is say, well, we're only going to purchase a $175 toilet, when really, if this is being a public space, it needs to be an ADA thing, it needs to be substantial. I don't want to save $25 and end up having to replace that toilet in 2 years because we didn't say, well, that's okay. Go out and spend a little bit on that. I'm using that as an example.
Yeah.
I'd want to be able to evaluate, the cost based on the shared equity that we want to achieve at the end of the day. I think it's a great spot for Jason to have his office, not in his home, but next door. We shouldn't live at our place of work. He does. He shouldn't bring it home. So having that next door is huge. Having the opportunity to do meetings for the airport management out there is huge. I like the idea of a pilot's lounge. The element of the community-based airport that we have, community needs to gather somewhere. They need to have a spot that isn't in a hangar. Hangars might be fun to go look at a piece of aircraft equipment, but they're not great places to chill and camaraderie.
Actually,
and build a community.
You do chill.
Yes, most of the year.
You
bake.
You chill or bake.
So,
well, and I think from my standpoint is we've really been looking at community-wide, county-wide economic development. And we believe that the airports, both of them, are a key component of economic development for both the Illinois Valley and this end of the county. With the grant for the water system out there, the idea is that the industrial park be developed, that there's going to be more activity on that airport, that there's going to be more usage. Really important to me is the after-school program that Southern Oregon Air Academy is potentially going to be bringing in out there. We want there to be opportunities for our kids in the Illinois Valley to have a future, and aviation is a great opportunity for them to have a future, a job that pays the bills, that a family can be raised here. It's something we want to highlight, and to me, the museum and the smoke jumpers is a part of building that interest in aviation as well, and you guys need to be and continue to be a great partnership in that way as far as mentoring and everything else that's there. It's a key component for me that you guys continue to be a part of the airport. But with all this movement, I think it highlights all the more why we do need to make sure this building stays under the control of airport, that we put some things in there. We do need to remediate it. I'm glad we're not tearing it down. And you guys are a part of us getting to that decision, I think, that we need not to tear it down.
We're pretty blessed to have this community partner.
Yeah. Who
else are you going to go do this?
We were on a trajectory, and you guys said, wait, pause, look at this other aspect, which I appreciate. Because if we are doing more out there, we're going to need this space to have a hub. And if it looks historically fitting in all that, mm-hmm. even though, great. Let's make it, to me, looking at that entrance and how small the Ivy Airport sign is that you can't even tell that's there. You see the plane, you see the smoke jumpers, but you don't know it's the airport entrance. We can also be better partners, and that's the hope, is that this is going to be an economic hub for the Illinois Valley. We've also been talking about FireWise. What if we can get something based out there that we're using it as a fire, fighting fire prevention base as well? So I'm really grateful that you guys said, wait a second, will you rethink this? But I also, and we need to continue to be good partners, but I also think we need to keep envisioning what growth can happen out there.
So we need to come out of this meeting with an MOU that outlines your guys' objectives, our objectives. I'd really like facilities to partner with Larry and Jason on a county side to say, to do that, at what point we say, well, we're going to replace the roof, and that's going to cost some money, but we're not going to have to address the element of maybe it's going to leak, or maybe it was installed incorrectly, or a constant ongoing maintenance element for Jason, to where he's like, wait a second, I'm spending a fair amount of my time during the wet season repairing a roof that may have been installed improperly, and that's going to cost $5,000 more to deal with now, but it saves him a tremendous amount of time for 30 years, or the next Jason comes along. But we do need to, what we've done in the past with projects like this, is we put together the proposal, codify it in a couple-page MOU, and we've done that with the city of Cave Junction right now on a security and lighting and landscaping plan. We granted them about $100,000 to do that out of the money from the sale of the county building. There might be resources that we can apply for to help offset some of the costs. Because I believe if we include Southern Oregon Air Academy, that economic development piece, and some others, there's resources there to meet this need, and potentially. I can't speak for that, but I know that Larry doesn't have a lot of he doesn't have a lot of money in his coppers to go scraping it.
That's not been spent and dedicated.
At the walls. So, but we'll find the resources on our side. You guys are presenting sweat equity, like to do the work kind of a thing. I know that there's some elements that we would want to specifically outline for licensed bonded contractors, and we just need to, you and I probably need to sit down and with Larry and delineate that, and we just put it in a bullet point and say, those are the things that are going to be done by that, you guys are going to handle these things, this is what it's going to look like. There's two people to check off on the county side for every purchase is good to go on this, and we move forward, and we get it done in a time frame that I think is reasonable, like by next May, June, it's all done.
Spring,
somewhere in the spring, I think, is a doable thing.
Actually, I can relate to a couple of things.
I don't want to over-obligate you guys, because it's like two guys doing this or whatever.
Let me respond to two things. One is that many times I've been accused of having low budgets, but every time I've come in under.
Okay.
So I'm pretty confident with the numbers. And one reason I'm confident...
Under promise and over deliver.
Well, I'm confident with the numbers because they're retail pricing that I use.
Sure.
And I never have bought anything retail price.
Okay.
Okay? I bought it somewhere between a 20% discount and a 100% discount.
Sure.
The floor in the mess hall was 100. I was trying to get 20% from a guy who always gives me 10%.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I've been a contractor for 40 years buying from Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I know the owner very well. Enough said there. But he actually donated all of that material.
My thought wasn't against that. So. It was when we're doing the decision to put hardwood in the entrance, mm-hmm. or I'm okay with putting hardwood everywhere. If it stands up and it can meet the wear requirements that linoleum will, I'm okay with that. Or something that isn't carpet, you know, that doesn't take a lot of maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah. We believe there's hardwood floor in the whole house. Okay.
Okay.
And if you go into the admin building and you'll see somewhere up on these pictures, you'll see what 1940s hardwood looks like. Actually, this is 1950s, 57.
I have it in my house.
Okay.
50.
So, I mean...
The restoration in the admin building was beautiful.
And that's exactly what we're proposing here in this building. Because the floor is...
I want it to be a showcase. I don't want it to look like we put it...
The other thing was...
I don't think it would. I just don't want, you know...
No, I understand that. The other thing is, Dan at our last meeting said... Well,
do you mind if we call Commissioner DeYoung, so I don't know that you're speaking about another Dan? I'm not aware.
Oh, okay.
I would just...
Commissioner DeYoung implored us to have a very short time schedule. Now, to me, that means 30 days. But I don't think that's what he meant.
No.
And so I came up with a 90-day. But I'm satisfied with 120-day, too. April or May, I'm okay with that too.
The weather's gonna be an issue.
Yeah, it'd be good to have the 120 or 180 or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I'd rather it be done right
in
a short time frame. Yeah. But if it means that, I mean, not
to. We've been talking about this for 3 years.
Yeah.
But if it takes you four months to do something,
there could be some unexpected things come out.
Yeah.
So
sure.
It's better to have.
Sure.
It's good to have goals though. If you don't set expectations, you will be talking about this with. Three new commissioners in six years or something like that.
Sure, sure.
You want to do that.
Yeah. One thing I want to try to do now, there we can move. There's, maybe. Okay, this is just a diagram of the house. And the red numbers are dimensions. And then the key there relates to all the numbers of what the different rooms are, okay? And I just wanted to point out, which I guess I can't do with our little pointer thing, is the 4A and 4B are the two bedrooms on the south side of the building. The other, the residence, is further to the south, to the left of the 16 and 20. And that red line there is eliminating that, not totally eliminating the wall, but making an opening in the wall there. So that those two bedrooms then would become the secure office
for
the resident manager.
Wherever. I'm wondering, how do you turn that into, what is that one squiggly line over
there? The squiggly line is the brickwork where the wood stove sits.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
It used to be a full brick fireplace.
Yeah, it used to be a full brick fireplace.
Now it's just a stove.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a stove there on one corner of it. Yeah.
So is it possible to make one and two more of an open area?
It is an open area.
Oh, it is. It's
a line. I put that line there just because that's kind of the delineation between the kitchen and on the far right of the two there was where a dining room table sat. Okay.
Okay.
Then number one was the living room.
Yeah, quote unquote living room.
Yeah, living.
But that's one room.
Yeah.
That's
it is essentially one room.
There's an opening between in that line between one and two. There's an opening there.
I wish the little pointer worked, but where the two is, right across there is where there is a wall there, and that's where the refrigerator and stove and things like that.
I'm looking for a lounge area.
Mm-hmm. Well. It would be that one and two area.
Good.
It would be a conference, meeting room.
Meeting room, conference room.
something
okay.
like that. I put that there just to...
I've got an ADA compliance project going at the Grants Pass Airport right now with a couple of, there's three restrooms there.
Do you need to come up here so we can get you on the recorder? Sorry.
Happy to do that. So I think that having an ADA compliant restroom in this building would be a key component of a remodel.
Yeah. But it also requires a ramp in the front, just make sure that we get...
Yeah, unfortunately,
there's not much of a ramp because it's pretty well level there. And that's no problem. You put a 36-inch door in that room number 6 there, and you provide rails.
In the 5 minutes that we have, we need to really iron out next step. And it really is, in my mind, I don't know where you're at, but I think it is outlining the specific, your guys is responsible for this, we're responsible for that. And this is what it's for when we're done, the product, who's going to be in charge, timeline, budget, all in an MOU that we can just, you put a John Hancock on.
That's going to happen in the next 5 minutes?
No, but that's what I
want. I was going to say, wow.
Commissioner Hare, would you?
I can do that.
Would you object if I nominated you to be the one to do that?
Sure, do it in 69 and a half days.
Yeah. Just the MOU portion.
And, sure. Yeah,
and well, and I, the hours. Reason why I'm suggesting that is too, is you've been the facilities liaison for 8 years. In addition to that, it's the facilities component, it's the component of the Cave Junction, the building, county building that we sold, and looking at that side of it, that as far as these steps mm-hmm. and responsibility, I would make a motion that you work with Director Graves and to outline that stuff that we can come back and, Mr. Graves, if you can bring it back to us for us to approve and sign, mm-hmm. that would be great.
And in my last 2 minutes, I just want everybody to look at this, and I want to tell you that this is the first thing is the emblem that we used to have above the admin, or, and still do. But this is the museum emblem,
totally.
Which I had a devil of a time exporting out of the file. I got it mm-hmm. from somebody else, but Ricky was able to figure out, she wasn't quite sure how she did that, but so she can't tell me how to do it again, but we did get it. So I just wanted everybody to be sure they see that.
Awesome.
It's good looking too.
Is there anything else you want, Simon, on this? I got the, I just wrote down, I was trying to write down quickly.
Oh, don't worry about that.
No.
I'll remember.
Each, okay.
I'll write it.
Okay. All right.
Great. I think I have all the pieces.
Send us a little email or something. And
it'd be good to have that MOU in place and signed, and it would be kind of a part of your parting, you know,
sure.
got this done kind of a thing, you know.
Well, and, it's these kinds of things that are going to help you navigate the challenges that will happen on this project of like, oh, we're not responsible for that.
No.
Okay. No, it clearly says the county's responsible for this.
Yeah,
or you're responsible for that.
Yeah. It'll protect you, it'll protect us, it's it'll make sure that we know
the
what's...
the guiding thing to say, mm-hmm. no, I think we talked about that. Yeah. It's actually written down right here.
And we bring it back and we put our names to it and you have our commitment to see it through.
Okay, great, thank you.
110%, we'll be behind it. Commissioner DeYoung alluded to his support for the broad concept. I didn't even talk about an MOU, but that's where I would have liked to have gone had he been here, and he was in support.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you've got all three.
Okay.
Manager.
Yeah, and for the record, I mean, I'm very supportive of the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper base, and I have been since day one, and I encourage continued work out there to, and you, as you guys will always do.
Well, and if there's a part of this as well to bring Southern Oregon Air Academy to see if there's space that could be utilized for the after-school program or something. If there's a way you guys can see if there's a possibility.
You know, it's going to be a few years before we actually get a hangar built out there at the Industrial Air Park area. And I think that, you know,
might happen faster than you think. Let's put it.
Well, I mean, if it was purely, that's really strange. I just saw a trailer go by that wasn't attached to anything.
No.
It
actually is, but it's down at the ground. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, and in any case,
cool.
I think this was a
we'll
good meeting. Yeah,
out.
We'll get it done, and thank you very much for coming
out. Well, I appreciate
coming
the
out.
Work that you guys have done so far. Sometimes you want to jump into stuff, but it's really important that everybody have an opportunity to work on this stuff before.
Well, if we get it done right, then it's not going to be whoever the next commissioners are. Or we go. This is a commitment that we as a county committed to, and so we move forward with that. So.
Yep.
Good.
And the partnership you guys offer, thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, appreciate it.
Okay.
And anything further? With that, we are adjourned at 12:01.
Thank you. See you.